US has lifted sanctions on several Myanmar businessmen tied to the military junta, sparking backlash from human rights groups.
In other news, the US has removed several allies of Myanmar's ruling general from its sanctions list. This comes just 2 weeks after junta leader Min Aung Hlaing praised President Donald Trump and called for sanctions to be lifted.
Listening to a special series from the Insight Myanmar podcast, where we're examining a quiet but deeply consequential move. The U.S. Treasury's Office of Foreign Assistance Control, OFAC, recently removed several Myanmar military-linked individuals and entities from its sanctions list. These delistings have sparked urgent questions about accountability, the direction of U.S. foreign policy, and what message this sends both the military junta and democratic resistance. Regional arms trafficking, illicit finance, and rare earth mineral extraction are all on the rise, with consequences that stretch far beyond Myanmar's borders. In this series, we're speaking with lawmakers, legal experts, human rights advocates, and voices from Myanmar's frontline struggle to unpack what happened, why it matters, and what comes next. With that, let's listen to the episode that follows.
I'm very pleased and lucky to be joined once again by one of our favorite guests and commentators, Sean Turnell. And we're going to be discussing the very recent and still very murky consequences of the American government's decision to lift sanctions on cronies connected with the military. But before we get into that, on the very slim chance, Sean, that some of our audience are not familiar with who you are, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure can. My name is Sean Turnell. I live in Sydney, Australia, but most pertinently, I suppose, I was economic advisor to the civilian government from 2016 to 2021, arrested at the time of the coup, spent a couple of years in the prison there for espionage, apparently, released in late 2022, but continue very much with Myanmar and Burma in mind. And real pleasure, I'd have to say, again, to join this podcast because the Insight team just do fantastic work. So, yeah, real pleasure to be back on the show.
Well, I mean, we really appreciate it and we love having your insights. So let's dive right into this. So we got the news, I think it was Thursday last week, so the 24th of July. We can date this as an emergency episode. So 24th of July, we get the word that the U.S. government is lifting sanctions on at least some of the cronies connected to the military. So before we delve into the consequences, can you tell us what the scope is of the sanctions lifting? Are the military themselves free of sanctions now, or how broad is this?
Yeah, not at all. So it's not very broad. In fact, that's key to understanding what's happened. This is very, very targeted to a few individuals and a few enterprises that are listed under US sanctions. So in no way does this imply at all that the military is getting off the hook or indeed, I think, any change to US policy. It's still concerning, but it's very, very tight and very much just the individuals named.
Okay. Now, when it comes to things like that, there's the other question. How effective would these sanctions previously have been? I know that a lot of regimes, North Korea is a very good example of this, have a practice where you can sanction an individual, you can sanction an organization, and they will very happily rename that organization, or indeed that individual can legally change their name to skirt sanctions. So with the sanctions that were in place, do we know whether those were effective sanctions? Would those sanctions have been being avoided by the cronies anyway? Do we have any thoughts on that?
Interesting. I guess we can presume that they were having some effect because the individuals have paid a lot of money, presumably, to various lobbying firms in Washington to have the sanctions lifted, and that's been successful. So, you know, we could almost assume from that in itself that the sanctions were effective. But I do take your point. You're absolutely right, of course, that many of these enterprises, many of these individuals sort of duck and weave and try to avoid sanctions as much as they can. That's why I think overall, you know, I don't see this issue as being perhaps as significant as some reports suggest, even though, as I mentioned, it is concerning, and I think, you know, some sort of attention to it is really warranted.
Yes, and I think, you know, we've heard a lot of very, very heavy language recently with regards to these sanctions, you know, phrases being thrown around like this is the end of the revolution and so on. And it sounds very much, fortunately, that you do not agree with that prognosis. So we'll get into that analysis in a second. But you mentioned that they were paying a large sum of money. And I think this is telling because one of the through lines in the narrative that's been bouncing around is that Min Aung Hlaing flatters Trump in a letter, and Trump then reciprocally decides to lift the sanctions. But that does not appear to be the case. It seems to just be coincidental that at the same time that Trump was being flattered by Min Aung Hlaing, these other people were putting a lot of money and a lot of political capital behind lobbying a arm of the US government to have those sanctions lifted. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. But I think that's why the story has got such legs, because exactly of the coincidence that you've mentioned. You know, it came at a time when Min Aung Hlaing sent that very flattering letter to Trump after Trump wrote to him about the whole issue of tariffs. I think the other thing that's adding to, you know, the discontinuity with it, if you like, was that only a few weeks ago, of course, some sanctions bills passed, some critical congressional committees in America. So, you know, all the momentum was for more sanctions. So, you know, this announcement, you know, as tightly targeted as I think it is, but it did seem at odds with the general drift. Mm. So I certainly get why people are discombobulated by it. It just doesn't seem to make sense.
Absolutely. And I know this is a tangent, but, you know, how often am I sitting with an actual economist? Speaking of those tariffs, obviously Trump has been on a massive tear with those, and he's announced tariffs against Myanmar. The question being, would those tariffs actually have a measurable effect as far as the military is concerned? Is Myanmar export to the United States significant enough that they really need to worry about those? Would that have lit a fire under the military to say, okay, we really need to start working on those sanctions to balance out the deficit? Would they really be impacted?
No, I don't think so. So even though the tariffs were quite high, 40%, that's about the highest, you know, that's been levied in this latest round of tariffs. But yeah, the trade between Myanmar and the US is infinitesimal. And in many ways, you know, one of my big points that I often make, of course, is that Min Aung Hlaing is already the biggest sanctioner on Myanmar, you know, through his disastrous economic policies, but even more so, his scrutiny of foreign exchange transactions that come in and out of Myanmar, you know, the regime's desperate desire to grab as much foreign exchange as they can. That is in itself is a huge sanction because there's absolutely no incentive if you're an exporter in Myanmar to export, you know, because you can only find yourself in trouble. So, yeah, so I think the tariffs are, you know, very much small beer in comparison to that. So, yeah, so I think it's a sort of very much separate issue. And I think the tariffs really, yeah, very negligible effect on anything really.
Okay. So this is definitely giving us a much better picture and a much more optimistic picture of this. But the other thing then becomes, you know, you say that that organizations themselves were removed from the sanctions list. Now, obviously, having looked at the MEC and MEHL, these enormous conglomerates that control this huge slice of the economic pie within Myanmar, it's so clear that to the military, the economy is just a shell game of companies and holding companies and conglomerates and all these other things. Is removal of sanctions from organizations or companies, is that going to open up a sort of backdoor for the military to be able to skirt the sanctions that do continue to exist?
I don't think it'll open a back door, but it does give them it gives them a little bit of wind in their sails, even though I think, you know, to think that is sort of to actually misunderstand what's going on. But nonetheless, I think their misapprehension in thinking that this is meaningful will give them a little bit of confidence, and I think it will give a bit of confidence to individuals and individual entities to also try and get sanctions lifted from them along the way. So, yeah, so it is still worrying to me, even though, you know, as I say, I don't think the intention in any way is to change policy. And I think, you know, Myanmar's democracy still has a friend in certainly the US Congress, and to the extent that it pays attention, the US administration. But, you know, having said that, these developments are not good, because I think it does, you know, as I say, give the regime a bit of hope that they can change something, and that, you know, builds their confidence and all that, and I don't think that that's ever a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. And the other one here is as well, the relationship. Do we have any scope on this? Because obviously we know the military has a close relationship with their cronies, you know, some of their most staunch supporters, but at the same time, those cronies are still technically independent people, and the organizations that they run are still notionally independent private enterprises. They don't necessarily turn over all of their wealth to the military. Rather, they pressure the military when their sources of wealth are being threatened. So the question is, how much of this sanctions relief, as far as these private enterprises and private individuals are concerned, could realistically become money going into the hands of the military?
Good question. I think quite minimal, but again, I don't want to. I am as you said, I do tend to be an optimistic person, yeah. But I don't want to be too optimistic in this case, because certainly the individual enterprises, just on the face of it, look of great concern, you know, because we're basically talking about arms supplies and things like that. So this is, you know, not an area that one shouldn't have a lot of concern about. So, but yeah, I still think that the big issues are still about sanctioning the state-owned banks, potentially sanctioning the central bank, you know, issues to do with the gas money, all of that sort of stuff. That's where the real business is. But it is still worrying, you know, because as you said, these cronies, they're not technically part of the regime, but they do offer the regime all sorts of channels for getting real and financial resources moving around the deck and supporting their military activities in Myanmar. So, yeah, so as I say, it's still worrying, even if it's not, you know, the big ticket sort of exemption, if you like, that the military is probably looking for.
Absolutely. And so while we're having this discussion, what can you tell us about the individuals, and what can you tell us about the organizations? I know you mentioned arms dealing in there. So do we know who these people are really? Do we know what industries they're involved with? How much do we know?
It's all very, very murky, because even the original sanctioning against these people would, you know, make certain allegations, and particularly in the whole area of arms shipments and things like that. But OFAC in Treasury, the unit of the US Treasury that determines sanctions, is never usually fully transparent in outlining the reasons for, and you know, for legal aspects and all that. So, but we know enough, again, to be concerned, you know, that the allegations against these people and against these entities were not for sort of small matters. This was very much directly related to the supply of arms to the regime and facilitating the financing, etc. of that. So, yeah, so, you know, these are the issues that you would really want to see attention being drawn to.
Absolutely. So going back to the fact that these people were able to lift the sanctions through lobbying in Washington, and you say that there's not a huge amount of transparency here. So let's try to get an understanding of this. who is responsible for laying sanctions? Who is responsible for lifting sanctions? Is there an individual who basically has supreme authority in these matters? Would it be a committee, or would it just be the State Department without any understanding as to how internal decisions are made?
Yeah, well, at the risk of sounding like an economist and saying it's complicated, but it actually is complicated, it's very much, though, not an individual. So the most likely unit that determines these things is the so-called Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, of the US Treasury. So it does the technical work, if you like. It does all the aspects of lining up the sanctions, what sort of sanctions to apply, who gets on it, etc. Now, having said that, though, that they're the technical people, there's a certain amount of politics that is, you know, inescapably part of this process, because individuals and entities are brought to OFAC's attention, of course, through political operations of some form. It could be, you know, advocacy groups for democracy and so on in Myanmar. It could be the reverse, and you know, in this case, lobbying firms perhaps seeking for someone to come off sanctions, etc. So politics comes into the equation at multiple stages here, even though the technical aspects would be decided within OFAC of Treasury. But how things get brought to their attention, whether it be to put things on sanctions or to take sanctions off, you know, there are all sorts of influences that could come to play. So it's a complicated picture. Also, the number of bodies that are involved in the whole sanctioning process in the US are many, many and varied. So even though OFAC and Treasury is the main one, there are other players in this sort of ecosystem as well. But it looks like, on the face of it, that this is OFAC and Treasury making this decision at the moment.
Okay. And so the United States, especially under Republican regimes, and especially right now, seem to be moving towards what they call the unitary executive. And so OFAC and Treasury being subordinate to government, does this imply that if Minh Anh were able to ingratiate himself with the Trump cabinet, and because, let's be completely realistic, the high levels of the US political establishment don't really care about Myanmar all that much, is it possible that Trump could be putting pressure in the future on OFAC and Treasury to lift sanctions so that he can make friends?
It might be possible, and that's something I worry about a lot, because another element here is that, of course, all the big organs of state in the US are currently being denuded of staff. You know, there's been, as we know, thousands of sackings in State Department. Treasury, I think, is not so much affected, certainly state, and obviously institutions like USAID have been decimated and so on. So what worries me a little bit, you know, because I've laid stress, if you like, on the technical aspect of OFAC and Treasury and all that. But if you have just a lack of people who understand Myanmar in OFAC, in State Department, etc., then I think the opportunities, if you like, for politicians to make the running on these things just increase. So I think it's a good point you raise. It's something that I do worry a lot about in the future, because, you know, the whole procedural aspect, good procedure on these matters, may become less of a commodity, you know, as these agencies just lose staff and lose expertise.
And so as you've already basically said, that the oversight, public oversight, and I might even go so far as to presume judicial oversight over these types of decisions is quite minimal. Is there any legal framework, by the way, for sanctions? Is there anything that the United States has set down in law that OFAC and Treasury and other bodies must abide by? Any circumstances in which they must place a sanction, or any circumstances in which they must lift one?
Most of that is delegated to OFAC and Treasury. So there are laws and executive orders that are made, but in terms of enacting actions, if you like, to bring those about, that's very much an internal process. So there are guardrails and all that, but the significant thing, it's not a judicial process as such. So it's not like that sanctions are determined in a court of law or anything like that, or can be appealed on that basis. It's very much an administrative story beyond those initial organisations, whether, as I say, it could be executive order, it could be a bill of Congress, etc.
So effectively, looking towards the future, if we were to see a continued lifting of Myanmar and military-associated sanctions, there would not be any legal recourse, there would not be any way to challenge that decision to lift the sanctions. It's all internally done, and there's no public avenue for redress.
You could lift an awful lot of sanctions just simply through executive orders and then administrative actions on the basis of that. So, yes, much would be vulnerable if that was to happen.
Okay. So then, that being the case, I know you said that ostensibly they would have spent a lot of money to have these sanctions lifted and lobbying, which sounds very bad. I just want to sort of look at that a little bit more. I want to ask you about how much money you think this would have taken and how long it would have taken. But I also want to understand, when we talk about lobbying, to a lot of people, it kind of sounds filthy. It sounds like adjacent to bribery. It's saying, I'm offering you a quid pro quo. I'm offering you money or funding or support in exchange for something. That's sort of how we view political lobbying. And the idea that what essentially amounts to a pretty important element of foreign policy would be subject to the actual targets of that foreign policy lobbying is a little bit disturbing. So is it different than the image I have in my head of someone from Myanmar walking into an office with effectively a briefcase of money and saying, wouldn't it be lovely if this money were injected into the American economy, lift the sanctions, and maybe that will happen? What would lobbying look like in this case?
So at the risk of sounding naive, I don't think that is the process. But certainly big money is spent on the basis of lobbying. But by lobbying, what we would mostly mean, and this is probably the ideal presentation of it, is that, you know, let's say you were a Myanmar individual and you had some sanctions put on you, you could go to a lobbyist to basically argue your case at OFAC. And probably what you would try to do is say, look, there's been some mistake. And you might even argue, look, Burmese names are all very, sometimes similar. You've got the wrong person. The person with exactly the same name as mine, they're the person who was importing fuel on behalf of the Myanmar military. It wasn't me. So, in other words, you would be paying the lobbyist to basically say, look, you've got it wrong. You've got my name wrong. The central allegations are wrong. I actually run a cooking oil business and not a jet fuel business, etc. So you'd be trying to present that somehow a mistake has been made, that the allegations against you have been mistakenly levied or, you know, whatever, and then trying to get that reversed within the sort of internal deliberations of OFAC and Treasury. So you'd be putting an argument and you'd be, you know, paying very articulate people to make those arguments. And, you can actually, online and so on, there actually are some testimony given by some of the lobbyists against sanctions. And if you listen to them, they're very effective at what they do, you know. One can disagree with what they say, I hasten to add, and I happen to more or less 100%. But these people can be quite persuasive. So you're paying for that. In a sense, you're paying for an advocate. Now, whether anything more untoward happens, I wouldn't know about. But yeah, even without that, you would be still paying a lot of money for advocates to make your case.
So essentially, this, when we talk about lobbying in Washington, what this is closer to is what we might call an administrative appeal.
That's a very, very correct way, I think, of looking at it. I think that's exactly how to look at it. Yeah.
But so then, effectively, if the United States is lifting these sanctions, is that the United States tacitly saying, you know what, we made a mistake? It's not that they're saying the sanctions existed for a good reason; they serve their purpose, and we have decided not to continue going forward with them. Rather, they would be saying, you know what, the sanctions should never have been put there in the first place.
No, because it could be more complex than that. So say okay. You might have a different sort of scenario, right? So you might have someone pay a lobbyist to argue that, look, I used to do this, but now I've stopped. Because of US sanctions, I'm a changed man doing a changed business. And so, you know, I was helping jet fuel, but now I'm doing cooking oil. So, so you could argue that. In other words, there's, you know, many, many ways I would imagine that they can present an argument. Whether it's true or not, of course, is a very different thing. But you'd be trying to make some sort of argument to have the sanctions lifted.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. And so then, again, looking towards the future here, so do you have any estimate, any concept of how much money and how much time would have gone into getting to this result of sanctions relief?
Not in exact numbers or anything like that, but to say that it's usually a lot of time and a lot of money. Because one thing I'm confident of is that people who are on the sanctions list are almost certainly it's almost certainly completely justified, you know, because to get somebody on the sanctions list is a lot of hard work as well. So, you know, we've been talking about the work, et cetera, of getting people off it, but the reverse is true as well. So Treasury and OFAC really need to be convinced that somebody or some entity needs to be on it. So that there's a good reason that they're on it. So to come off really, I think, takes a lot of time and a lot of money. And most of the time, that doesn't work. Again, for good reason, because, you know, there's usually a lot of evidence as to why somebody should be on the list. And we can even get a bit of a clue on that, because in the wake of this announcement last week, there's been a couple of lobbyists who have gone online in various social media to say, you know, that they were surprised to get this result, that they were sort of, you know, pumping up their own book and their own activities in this regard. But you couldn't, that they couldn't disguise their surprise. So, I think that tells us how difficult it is and probably how much it's going to cost.
Okay. And so while we're talking about the difficulty of getting things on the sanctions list, what can you tell us as an overview of the current sanctions landscape? Because I assume it's not as easy then, based on what you're saying, for the Americans to just go, you know what, the Burmese military, just sanction the whole thing. If you're in the military, if you're owned by the military, if you're a member of the military, if you are the military, you're all just on a sanctions list. That doesn't seem to be a trigger that they can pull, because it's much more nuanced and much more targeted. So how powerful, how potent is the sanctions regime against Myanmar currently?
Well, it is still pretty potent, because, see, what we're talking about here of people coming off the list are individuals and individual entities. But you can have big entities who are sanctioned. So all of MEC, for instance, all of, you know, the Myanmar Economic Bank or whatever it is. So, so you can do those big, broad categories. So US sanctions at the moment, I think, are extremely effective. And as evidence of that, I particularly point to the sanctions on two of the big state-owned banks, the Myanmar Foreign Trade Bank and the Myanmar Investment Commercial Bank. Both of those banks were the big players in terms of foreign exchange of the junta. They were the ones that made the payments to China, made the payments to Russia, facilitated the arms flows, etc. The US hit them with sanctions, and that now their business in foreign exchange has almost completely disappeared. And instead, it's migrated across to the Myanmar Economic Bank and to some of the private banks. So sanctions, on the one hand, very effective, but as I'm sort of hinting at, incomplete, because now what we need to see is Myanmar Economic Bank being sanctioned, some of the private banks being sanctioned, and perhaps even sanctioning the central bank itself. So the interesting thing, your question's a really good one, because, you know, up until last week and this announcement of, you know, lifting off the sanctions on these particular individuals, the trend, if you like, had been increasing sanctions. You know, I mentioned the congressional committees and what they had passed, and basically they're moving in the direction of extending those sanctions to include other banks, to include the financial system much more broadly. So the momentum, apart from this announcement, has been all in favour of sanctions up until recently.
Okay. So that's at least indicating that the State Department is not, or rather you're saying OFAC and Treasury are not taking the Myanmar situation lightly. Is there any chance, because now everyone's in a tizzy. Everyone's sort of panicking, and you're saying that the panic is a little bit unjustified. But as just coming back to the question of putting people on the sanctions list, do you think it's possible that although these individuals have been taken off the sanctions list, do you think it's possible that OFAC and Treasury will also at some point announce other individuals being placed on the sanctions list? Because I think that would do a lot to bring back confidence in the sanctions regime.
Yep, I sure do. And in fact, I see significant sanctions still coming ahead. You know, and again, I mentioned the Myanmar Economic Bank, and like to highlight that again now, because you know that is a bank that does a huge amount of foreign exchange business for the junta. So critically important, you choke that off, and you choke off a lot of other things. Likewise, on the jet fuel, you know, the evidence that is being assembled on some of the ways in which that makes its way into Myanmar, becoming, you know, quite fast and et cetera at the moment. So, I would indeed see significant movements to that end. But that's also why, you know, I'm a little bit concerned, as I mentioned earlier, at just the decimation that's taking place within State Department, possibly Treasury as well, because, you know, in order for this to happen, you need people to do it. You know, there's the practicalities of just making sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, and you get all the right institutions and individuals in the sanctions. So, you know, again, there's all sorts of reasons to worry. But, I do think the broad momentum is still in that direction, notwithstanding, you know, the lifting of these individuals recently.
I mean, just on that, the cutting down of staff, are OFAC and Treasury also responsible for imposing tariffs?
Well, no. So this is a different branch. Involving the Commerce Secretary, the Special Trade Representative, and really all the way up to the President himself when it comes to tariffs. So, pretty much a different sort of barrel. I'm not sure Mr. Trump's mind whether he separates the two, because you might have noticed just recently he's mentioned tariffs in the context of Russia. You know, he's becoming increasingly
sanctioned.
Well, he's mentioned sanctions, but then also tariffs as well. You know, so the latest thing he sort of railed against Putin the other day and said that he was going to levy 100% tariffs against him, as opposed to sanctions. You know, so again, I worry somewhat that there may be a bit of confusion about the different measures here. But but I think the rest of the government is pretty clear about which one's which.
That's under this government, it's always, oh, what's coming around the corner? But I want to jump back, because you sort of artfully dodged committing to any specific figures, and I respect that. But on the question of time and cost to get sanctions lifted, do you have a like order of magnitude? Would it take 3 months to get a sanction lifted? Would it take in excess of a year? Would it take $100,000, or would it take closer to $10 million? Can you give us like a vague concept?
Well, so on the timing, it's usually years, not months. Yeah, if at all. Because, again, most of the time these efforts are not successful for the simple reason that, the people are on the lists for a good reason, and that reasons are not easily overturned. So it takes a lot of time. I must confess, though, I'm not being cagey on the money. I really have no idea how much it costs. I would imagine it's quite a bit. But it's not such figures are beyond my world, unfortunately.
but again, if you're saying that the majority of attempts fail, then we could reasonably assume that from the Myanmar side, the lifting of these sanctions did not just take the salaries of the advocates who did the lobbying for these sanctions lifts. It would also have involved a lot of money being paid to a lot of advocates who attempted to lift other sanctions and failed. So we could reasonably multiply whatever the cost is by a relatively large number.
I think that's right. I'm sure there's a lot of money being spent on lobbyists more broadly. Yeah.
Okay. So this would be a pretty significant financial investment for the cronies. And if they continue to succeed, then that might embolden them. But if they were failing left, right, and center, then they'd just basically be throwing money out the window.
Yeah, and I think what's noteworthy about this is that it has worked. So the thing that we don't hear about, of course, is all the money, all the cases that are failing. So, and you know, I do suspect that this success, quote unquote, is sort of the tip of a very large iceberg of unsuccess.
mm. Yeah, that's a concern. So this is what the sort of final direction of questioning that I have here is what would we be looking at? What would we be expecting in the future? Would we anticipate that there are going to be more sanctions? Because you don't want to say, and it's very clear from your speaking that the culture, the mentality at OFAC and Treasury has not fundamentally changed. This is not a case where everyone's been ripped out of the building and a whole bunch of new people with no concept or with a completely radical worldview have been put in to replace them. So it's not that they would suddenly decide that Myanmar is a great friend and we should support them in whatever way we can. But is it likely that we are going to see in the future more sanctions being lifted? Could the value of the sanctions lifts go up? Could something like MEC get off the sanctions list? What do you think the prognosis is?
I think we're not likely to see organizations like NEC come off the list or anything like that. What I am a little bit worried about is that if the regime runs this, you know, this absurd election that they're talking about, yeah. I think we all worry that, you know, that lowest common denominator stuff comes into play and yeah. some countries, you know, start to implicitly recognize the junta as some sort of representative government, etc. I mean, it would be complete fiction, but there'd be a lot of people incentivized enough, you know, to grab on to that fig leaf, etc. And so at that point, you could worry about a sort of drumbeat towards normalization. And that would then, you know, put the onus on people like myself and anyone concerned with, you know, freedom and peace in Myanmar to really make the point that this is not real, etc. But yeah, I would worry about a bit of a drift in that direction. Likewise, you know, I think we would need to pay scrutiny on the US situation as we need, I think, every other country and all the other institutions as well to make sure that they're getting the right information, that decision making is not being influenced by politics, etc., or that, you know, that they start to lack the capacity to make proper decisions. So there's plenty of things to worry about. Even though I think we're still a long way short of the regime itself being in any way getting off sanctions list and so on in the United States, because, you know, it's true that the administration at the top is a, you know, a loose cannon, etc. But there are very significant people, very significant institutions in the US who exactly know the score in Myanmar, and I can't imagine that they would take any of that lying down.
And so it almost sounds like what you're saying is that we on the sort of pro-democracy, pro-peace side should be doing lobbying of our own, not just to the United States, but to the sort of countries that would be likely to use the upcoming quote-unquote elections as an excuse to recognize and legitimize the military regime, to try to pressure them to not think that lifting sanctions is going to go unnoticed.
Yeah, I do. And even as you know, as sort of tiresome as it is, I think we've just got to be constantly out there beating that drum, you know, because there are people looking for opportunities, etc., in Myanmar to exploit the situation. And so, yeah, as I say, it's not at all a sexy task to do or anything like that, but I think we've just got to keep getting that message across that nothing is really changing in Myanmar except, you know, for the worst. But yeah, we've got to keep making that message because, you know, unfortunately, people have very short attention spans. Yeah. They get distracted, even if they knew about Myanmar in the first place. And it's up to us, I think, you know, just to keep reminding the world of the terrible atrocities that are going on because, you know, as we know, Myanmar is just so often forgotten.
Yes. And especially now when we have conflict in the Middle East, again, we have conflict Russia-Ukraine continuing, and the Trump presidency constantly, you know, taking up the news cycle with let's say, surprising developments, as it often does. I agree. It is difficult to get oxygen for Myanmar, and I think a lot of the people who just want to do business with the military and want to turn Myanmar into a sort of modern-day slave state are looking to take advantage of the relative media silence and the relative indifference that a lot of the world is showing to the crisis.
Yeah, so, and I think they're sort of, you know, looking to take the opportunity of our exhaustion, you know, which again is just why we've just got to keep on doing it. But it is exhausting. But yeah, we've got to keep these people at bay.
I mean, I agree with you that the fatigue is real, but, you know, I always try to think, well, you know, I do a podcast and then I get to sleep in a house with food. A lot of people in Myanmar don't have that luxury and they don't get to say, well, I'm tired, I'm going to stop.
It's a great point. It's a great point you make. Yeah.
Excellent. So I think to sort of recap what we're discussing here, because I want to make sure this is short and punchy for people so they can get that little hit of understanding that they need on this very complicated issue. You're saying that this particular lifting of sanctions is not necessarily going to be indicative of a wave of sanctions relief. It is not necessarily going to bring a very large amount of money to the military. And this is not an example of Trump being manipulated with flattery. This is not as severe as people are making it out to be. Is that accurate to your view?
That's entirely accurate, right? But without being too naive to suggest it's not a good thing, in my view, even, you know, in this very particular case, let alone broader implications. But I think your presentation is exactly right. We can calm down a bit about it for the moment. We've got to be, what is it, alert but not alarmed. Because I do think that this does not suggest any broad change in policy, and hopefully really soon we will get those extra measures, those extra sanctions measures, which again should, you know, give us the message that Myanmar's junta remains beyond the pale.
Yes, absolutely. And let's hope that happens, and let's hope that you'll come back and discuss those with us if and when those happen.
Well, I guess just to, you know, reiterate that we've just got to keep going, that there have been a few things lately that have given the whole movement a little bit of a knock, but I think it's more in the sort of image of things rather than the realities. We do have to always look out for the sort of fellow travellers of the junta who do just look for opportunities, money making and otherwise. Just sort of got to, I guess, keep moving in the same direction we have for the last few years. And I remain confident in the longer term, completely, actually, that this regime is losing. But we've sort of have to, I guess, be a bit resilient to the day-to-day fluctuations.
Our team here at Insight Myanmar is working tirelessly to bring you these stories, but the hard truth is, we're stretched pretty thin. Every episode requires many hours of research, interviews, editing, and production, and with limited resources, the production time often takes longer than we'd like. This prevents us sometimes from working on increased content that covers the pressing crises in the country. But the good news is, your support can help change that. With additional funding, we can expand our team, which would help us to shorten production timelines and increase our content offerings, thus ensuring that voices from Myanmar are heard when they matter most. If you'd like to help us keep up this pace and make an even greater impact, please consider donating at insightmyanmar.org/donation.
Yarananda, 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 Yarananda,